Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, what, we're going to take calls in this segment?
No.
Okay, that's
what?
Fine.
Was that quick enough for you?
No.
By the way, in my time on the show, which I believe is like 15 years now, we have taken one phone call. When we took that, Gary, you remember that?
Who was it
I think
from?
It went so well that we haven't taken one since.
You said,
was it Mike in Burke, Virginia?
I think we, if I recall correctly,
we talked
Tony into taking calls.
Yes,
we broke you down. Finally, you said, okay, I'll take one. And it went about 5 seconds. There was like an issue with the phone or something. He's
hey,
like,
Tony,
okay,
how you doing
again.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser.
Alrighty then, we're live at Chatter. That's the name of the restaurant where we serve breakfast starting at 7 in the morning at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, right inside the line in the District of Columbia, the capital of the United States of America. Programming note, we will not be here Friday. I'm old, and I'm going to take some days off here and there. Like a Friday here or there.
Sure.
You know, the Johnny Carson took 2 days off. David Letterman, I think, took two by the end. And I'm at the end. So we're not. Breakfast may be available on Friday, but I'm not going to be available.
Yeah, I believe breakfast is every day now.
So that would be good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Baby Bootsy came over last night.
Ooh, really?
Baby Bootsy came over last night. Michael cooked. Michael and Liz and Baby Bootsy came over. And I touched baby because I don't hold the baby. I touched the baby. And at one point, Liz said, did you wash your hands? I went, no. So then I washed my hands.
You had been doing dishes. We had a great pork tenderloin, and you had the spicy rub on your hands still, which you put on his hands, which he puts in his mouth.
Right. So what? So what? It'll help his palate.
You want him to get the flavor?
Yeah. So here's the problem that we have with Baby Bootsy, and the problem is the 75-pound dog, Chessie.
Yeah, right.
Now, what Chessie wants to do... Now, Chessie is, to be fair, she is not that all that interested in the baby. But when the baby is presented in front of her, she's not... she's happy.
Right. Yeah.
She's joyful. She may be a little bit exuberant, so you have to guard against her knocking down who's ever carrying the baby, which I totally understand. But after a while, when she is more docile and the baby is in a baby thing on the ground, like, what do they call those?
A little bouncer.
A little bouncer. So here seems to be the problem. And everybody's worried about this. And I sort of understand it, but, you know, I want to say, yeah, come on. Bootsy, to be fair, can't really do anything except lay there and wave his hands around.
Sure.
Okay. The dog wants to do... to Bootsy what the dog does to everybody, which is lick the feet or lick the face or lick the hands.
Yeah.
Dogs
just,
do.
That's what dogs do.
Yeah.
That is dogs' ways of showing, I like you.
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
Not biting you.
Right.
Now, the problem, you're
one of the clan.
The problem is with a dog this big, because the dog licks me all the time. There's some force behind that. There's some force, and it could, you know, flatten Bootsy's head. I mean, So where are we on this?
So I think Liz's fear is that the dog will permanently damage or scar Walker's beautiful little face.
Right.
And that dog's tongue is like rough sandpaper.
It is.
Bootsy's sitting there in his little bouncer. We think the dog is elsewhere, and then she sneaks around the corner and sticks her face in and just starts licking
it all up in there, boy.
My sense
is that dogs of all sizes and shapes intuitively know when they're around a baby or a little puppy, and they just immediately become docile. I mean, they still are affectionate, but they hold back. Now, if it were my infant, I'd still be nervous.
Sure.
But I've just seen so often that I mean, my big old lab, who's now passed, my dear Rusty, he was 85 pounds. And the little neighbor kids, when they were 3 and 5, he would let them, like, paint his fur blue, pull his ears, pull his tail, climb on him. And
but
he
3 to 5.
So
but
docile.
This is a 3-month-old baby.
Yeah.
This is a 3-month-old. By the way, I didn't introduce Liz Clark or David Aldridge.
No,
but, you
know,
okay.
You recognize the voices.
Anyway, that's my thought. Well, but again, easier said because it's not my infant there. But so, I have a lot of regard for the intelligence of dogs, you know, recognizing that a baby is a baby.
You have dogs?
No.
Okay.
I'm allergic.
Oh, you're allergic to dogs?
And cats.
No.
Is it? and cats.
Oh, yeah.
It's just animal fur? Is it animal fur?
Yeah. It's the dander and all that stuff. No, it's not every dog. I mean, there are some hairless dogs I could hang around with, but yeah, if you got any fur.
So what happened? So you could have you could hang around Ryan Sandberg before, but not now.
No.
Brian Urlacher before, but not now. So are we nearer to any? Are we nearer?
We are. I think what's great is that we picked Walker up out of the little bouncer, and Chessie then put her head into the space that he had been occupying and was sniffing and licking.
Sure.
That's right.
So I think they have,
smell.
Yeah, I think they are now on speaking terms,
right.
And going forward, they should have a good partnership.
That's good.
I think
that's
it's
good.
A simple
that's
solution.
Sweet.
Baby armor. Just put them in some baby armor,
yeah.
And then you're good to go.
All right, football game last night. Not the greatest game in the world.
No.
Odell
thanks for
Beckham.
Thanks for not passing the ball to Golden Tate. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, you had him in fantasy league, so you lose?
Yeah.
You have a trouble, please.
Chuck Todd won that game. Chuck Todd is now, he was looking at 2-5.
3-4 is different.
He went from 2-5 to 3-4. He's trending up.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So maybe he gets to 4-3 next week. Mm-hmm. Odell Beckham Jr. played, didn't do much.
Nope.
Four catches, 36 yards, not threatening catches. Matthew Stafford got a tremendous amount of money. Played fine.
He's
didn't
okay.
You know,
sure.
two touchdowns,
yeah. Sure.
Which is two touchdowns, and that was fine. Eli Manning kept getting roughed up, caught, and stuff like that.
Five sacks.
It turns, the game turns at 17-10. The game turns on a punt return
that
goes all the way, and Detroit wins. Detroit goes 2-0. Detroit hasn't been 2-0 in 5 or 6 years.
Oh, I think it's more than that.
Well, Oakland is 2-0. They haven't been 2-0 since 2002.
Oh, that's who I was thinking.
It's Oakland.
I'm sorry, it was Oakland.
It's
right,
Oakland,
right.
And Oakland looks real good at the moment. But at the end of the game, and this is what I want to get to, at the end of the game, Ben McAdoo, who's been the coach there for an hour and a half, you know, this is his second season, so he's two games into his second season.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's a weird-looking guy. I mean, let's be fair. He's a weird-looking guy. I mean, I say that as a weird-looking guy, so it's okay with me. But there's one play in which they're going to go on fourth down. They're going to go, and the Giants, they don't get the playoff.
Yeah.
They take the delay,
and
they end up kicking a field goal.
Yeah,
okay,
it's fourth
so
and goal.
Now what you don't know when that's happening is, are they really going to go on fourth? Mm-hmm. Are they going to try and draw an on? I mean, that's what you don't know. After the game, Ben McAdoo's direct quote, that was sloppy quarterback play. Eli Manning has two Super Bowls.
Yes. Right.
Eli Manning, whatever else Eli Manning is, he's a professional quarterback.
Yeah.
He may be in decline, but he's a professional quarterback.
Won some games up there.
I don't think you say
no.
Sloppy quarterback play. What do you think?
Well, that's a, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I can't be a hypocrite about it. I've railed against coaches throwing guys under the bus. I would just say in this case, I thought this immediately when that happened. Did it look like Manning didn't want to run the play? It looked like he was like, what are we doing? We should kick the field goal. What are we doing? And it's like, so I can't accuse him of sabotaging the play deliberately, but it certainly looked like he wasn't all that upset that they didn't get the playoffs. So I don't know. I don't know in that case.
That thought came into my mind as well, that he might not have been all in. Since they were really having trouble moving the ball. But, I think for the coach to say that about Manning after that particular game is preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
He was under siege the entire night.
Yes.
How he, as a quarterback, did not just throttle his left tackle is beyond me.
Right.
So if your quarterback is doing everything he can to get the ball out quickly. I don't know how much more quickly he could have gotten the ball out.
Right.
Is being pummeled every time he drops back.
Right.
And he's taking the high road with his line.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So the coach is going to call him out? I just think that's a sign of...
A quarterback can say that himself.
Sure.
He can say, I was bad. And a lot of quarterbacks do that. I don't think a coach is supposed to do that. I think if Jay Gruden did that to Kirk Cousins, there's no chance of signing him now, but there's more no chance.
I mean, certainly Jay did that with Griffin.
Because he wanted the other guy.
Well, and also Griffin was creating a lot of his own problems by holding the ball for forever. It was impossible for the line to protect him. I mean, there were a host of other things.
You see quarterbacks of consequence in the league, like Eli's older brother, Peyton. In the last 2 years, Peyton can't throw the ball 10 yards.
Right.
He can't, and no coach They don't point that out.
No.
Yeah, they tell you what a great field general
he
is.
Sure, sure.
Yes. You know. Yeah, yeah. And then I'm not saying that Jay calling out Robert was the way to go a couple of years ago, but there was reason. Was it better to do that privately?
I think it is.
I would think so. But that last night, after, I mean, I felt such empathy for Eli last night. No matter what you're
I thought that was bad. I think you can do it to younger players.
Maybe.
I don't think, you know, I mean.
I don't know. Why don't you give the left tackle some help if he can't block Ziggy Ansah? I don't understand that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Put a second person in there.
Yeah, it's a tight end.
That's a coaching failing.
Yeah. That's what I would think. So this is what I wanted to get to. During the game, I saw a commercial for a food product that stunned me. Now, I will tell you that it's a Taco Bell ad. Maybe you remember it. It's a Taco Bell ad in which it's got a lot of people in it, and they go, "What's that?" or something sounds like, "What's that?" Right. And it ends up with this Taco Bell thing, which is a fried egg on the outside. The fried egg is the shell, as if it were the taco. Uh-huh. Inside is bacon, potato, and cheese. Now, Taco Bell stuffs everything. They either stuff it with bacon, potato, or cheese,
right,
or meat, beans, and cheese.
Correct.
You can't get a ham sandwich at Taco Bell. Everything is something wrapped around something that ends in cheese. It always ends in cheese.
Yeah.
I looked at this, and the first thing that occurred to me was, wow, how do they keep the egg? If that egg is made in that day, presumably within a few minutes, how do they keep the egg from not breaking? How do they do that? And then it got me to thinking that I've been to Taco Bell 3 or 4 times in my life. That's all. But it is, to me, Taco Bell is, to me, a fabulous guilty pleasure. David, you've been on the road for a lot of years. Liz, you've been on the road for a lot of years.
Yes.
What is the guilty pleasure that you have? First of all, would you eat this thing?
No.
Oh, that was quick. I would eat this thing. I would try. You wouldn't?
No.
Why?
Well, I mean, I can't even count the fat grams, cholesterol. And I mean, I have learned as I age that you know, I live with what I eat for many hours afterwards. Right. And there's nothing good comes of that.
No.
Nothing.
No.
I mean, once you're past 25 years old.
David, you got so healthy. When you were a kid, you'd eat 8 of these.
No, not Taco Bell. Taco Bell to me is like, it's like cable access TV. It's like the lowest form.
Oh, that's well put.
The chance of finding a finger in there is high.
I'm attracted to Taco Bell. What's your? You're on the road. You're done late. What's your guilty pleasure in food?
Oh my God, Tony. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. There's nothing. Nothing jumps to mind.
See, Wilbon will stop at every McDonald's on the way
home.
Yes,
I know that at from every Olympics.
Every McDonald's on the
way
home.
Do you mean non-alcoholic?
Yeah. Something where you go, I'll take a shot at that. It's like 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning.
So I really am a reformed, you know, food addict. I walk such a fine line. But I do have a weakness on the road for, what do you call it, sweet potato fries. I see them on a menu.
Right.
Okay. Or onion rings if I think there's a better than likely chance that they're good. Because I think onion rings can be terrible or great. And if you find a great one, that's really memorable.
Do you go to drive-thrus or do you go to restaurants?
I don't have a brand. I mean, there's no...
Right. Like, but do you go to restaurants or drive-thrus?
Restaurants.
You'll
see. I'm not much of a drive-thru person.
I'm trying to think. Do you mean late night?
Late night. I can't imagine going in for that and planning your whole day around it.
I
think that's an impulse buy. Whoa.
I think it's
It's
so
got bacon,
age-related.
Potato, and cheese.
Right, it's right in front
and
of
tell
you.
Me how you put the egg on the outside.
Late night is just drinking.
That's it?
Now, when I was at the American University up the street and we would put the paper to bed, we would go to this... Right up the street.
Steak
it's still
egg?
There.
Steak
it's
and
still
eggs.
There.
Oh, yeah.
Steak and egg at 4 in the morning and just get in it. Get it in.
It's adorable.
And it would be awesome at 4 in the morning to have some home
eggs.
Fries and some...
And home... Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. In my youth,
oh, yeah, Silver Dawn,
especially
is
living in
breakfast.
New York
oh,
and spending time in Jersey, it would be the diner at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Leaving the show you just
that
saw.
That was living.
You know.
But you would have breakfast-type food.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I don't understand why it took McDonald's 50 years
to go all night.
Yeah, to go breakfast all the time. Yeah, I don't really understand that.
Fond memories.
Yeah. Breakfast is good. But you so quickly both said you would not eat that.
No.
That's more for me. More for me. We'll take a break when we come back. Jason Lockenfora will dissect some of the games over the weekend. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Upside.com ad, right? Or is this the Amazon.com ad? No, this is the Upside.com ad.
Upside.
But they mention Amazon because they give you a gift card.
Right.
I mean, I just gave away the ending, but you get a gift card. If you travel for business, you know it's a game of wins and losses. Having your hotel room away from the elevator, that's a win.
Yeah.
Not having Wi-Fi in your room, that's a loss.
Big L. Uh-huh.
Not having Wi-Fi. Doesn't everybody have Wi-Fi?
Yeah,
I would think that. Mm-hmm. Buying your business trip at Upside.com, well, that's not just a win. It is a triple win. And number one is Upside has the absolute best available prices for flights, hotels, and rental cars. Win number two is that Upside will reward you with a gift card to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. And number three is the amazing six-star treatment you'll get from Upside's customer service specialist, who they call navigators. Six-star. We have upped the ante. Six-star for Upside. Yeah. One recent Upside customer had a flight delayed for 2 hours, so a navigator arranged for him to have complimentary access to the airline's executive lounge to pass the time. That's pretty great, right? That's called my life. And that's David's too. I don't want to hear about
Not
it.
Not mine.
And that's just one example of how Upside navigators go above and beyond for business travelers. Imagine what they'll do for you. Upside navigators are instantly accessible 24/7 by voice, chat, email, or message on the Upside app, even reaching out to you with useful information to help you avoid a problem before it happens. And I'm going to start your Upside six-star treatment right now. You go to upside.com, U-P-S-I-D. Upside.com. You use my code Tony and you'll get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. That's the minimum you get. That's code Tony for the minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. You can get more when you buy your next business trip at Upside.com. Upside.com, you deserve a better business trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Steve Treichel. Steve from Alexandria says, attached are some songs from a former band I played with called The Movies from the album American Oil. Obviously, this is called North Star. For use at your discretion, quick tip, don't rename your restaurant The Food or The Restaurant. No one's Google machine will find you like they didn't find our band. In other news, Comcast double charged me $253.04 and applied neither payment to my account. My head nearly exploded. Can you help? No. I'm grateful for the music. Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports is the recipient of that tune, North Star, bringing him in. There's two things that jump out on me, and both are sort of public criticisms. And so I guess I should start with one or the other. Let me start with last night. Ben McAdoo saying of Eli Manning on a particular play, sloppy quarterback play, and we can't have that. Eli Manning has two Super Bowl rings, and Ben McAdoo is a weird-looking guy. What are your thoughts on that?
Is McAdoo's play sheet smaller from a year ago? It seems to only cover a little bit of the geography around his face, but not the entire upper deck anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the problem. I mean, Ben McAdoo's got an offensive line problem, and it's been seeping in there for a few years now, and I think it probably has affected Eli Manning's judgment a little bit. I think it's probably sped him up at times more than he might otherwise have been if he was operating with a normal cocoon. And I think that leads to some bad habits, and that makes you a little jittery. And, I mean, I don't know how you fix this on the fly. I really don't. You know, we've been a lot of – if you've watched most of these games, and I wrote this column on Sunday, the race to the bottom – it's going to be much more intent in the NFL than the race to the top. You got a good quarter of the league who they're all about that first overall pick, and they just are not professional grade. They're not put together in a manner that's conducive to success, and it boggles my mind because no sport has a longer offseason, right? I mean, most of these teams stop playing 2 days into January, and they don't play again until September. And they got all that time to sort it out. Yet we've seen a quarterback fired after 31 offensive plays into the season. We've seen an offensive coordinator fired 5 days into the season. We saw another quarterback fired one game into the season. We've got, you know, a bunch of other quarterbacks and coordinators who are on the cusp of being fired. We got a bunch of starting left tackles, like one we saw last night, Eric Flowers, who their jobs are in jeopardy. I mean, that's why the product's bad. That's why quarterbacks are suffering. I mean, and that's not the only reason, but you can't, if you don't fix it now, you can't fix it in September. You're not going to go out and buy a new offensive line. You're stuck.
I'm just curious. I mean, to publicly, there's two stars that come under criticism. One is Ezekiel Elliott, who gets lit up by LaDainian Tomlinson, who's a Hall of Famer. Right. And his coach says, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about this, but just remember, he's the most competitive guy in the world. You know, he backs his guy.
Right.
And here's Ben McAdoo not backing Eli, just laying this on Eli Manning, and you just go, really? Really?
Yeah, I mean, look, he didn't win those two Super Bowls for McAdoo. I will say that. You know, McAdoo came into the fold after that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with it, but go. You mentioned Jason Garrett and Ezekiel Elliott,
yes.
and how he backed him.
Yes.
Go look at what Garrett said about Dak Prescott,
yeah.
who had done nothing but make Jason Garrett look okay. like a savant to the point where he was coach of the year, wasn't he? And they won 13 games with a rookie quarterback, 13 in a row or whatever. He basically said our quarterback wasn't good enough, and that's not good enough, and he needs to get better after really Dak's first kind of stinker. So I don't know, Tone. I think McAdoo maybe at times is probably a little more unfiltered than he might be. He's only a little 18 months into this or whatever as a head coach. But I don't think I think Eli Manning, I mean, I think he's declining fast. I haven't bought Eli Manning for 3 years now, and I don't know that he's like his brother or Tom Brady, who we're still talking about as elite quarterbacks around age 40. I mean, Eli, to me, is an old 36.
Okay, let me get off that and go to the Cowboys for a second, because LaDainian Tomlinson lighting up Ezekiel Elliott is fun, but one or two plays don't change the character of that game. Denver beat down Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, Dallas is a team returning almost intact, and Denver beat them down. What do you make of that?
I've been waiting for this game for about 11 months. Every week, I look at Dallas's defense, and I look at certain, I shouldn't say every week, but most weeks, and I look at most of their opponents and say, maybe I'm the outlier here, but I don't. How's Dallas stopping this team? I just don't buy their ability to affect the quarterback at the point of releasing the ball and to affect the passing game downfield. I don't buy their secondary at all. I didn't like it last year. It held up, but then they lost Claiborne and Carr, and they didn't really replace them. And they don't have a pass rush. DeMarcus Lawrence is evolving, but that's it. There's nobody else. Nobody on that roster has 15 career sacks.
Wow.
No one has a pass rushing pedigree. Rod Marinelli, there's only so many permutations of his Rubik's Cube. There's only so much scheming you can do. And if that team now has to play from behind, because if you have a cover corner like Tlaib, and you're willing to go without a high safety and stick him on Dez, and he does the job, and two safeties are in the box, and Dak can't nickel and dime you with Witten and Beasley in the slot all day, then that's it. Like, because they're not the only way the defense functions is if they have the lead like they did last year. So now if they're playing from behind with that defense,
yes.
and Elliott's out of the game because you've got to open up the attack, and you're playing against a half-decent defense, to me, the Cowboys were going to be the poster boys for regression. They beat the Giants, but we've seen the Giants look like dog food for 2 weeks.
Right.
I am a Cowboys skeptic.
Okay. All right. Well, then let me go to the other end of the NFC, which was Atlanta beating Green Bay and looking very convincing doing that. Now, Green Bay had the toughest two opening games of any team in the league, home Seattle at Atlanta. And Atlanta did not look good at all in the first week, and they could have lost. If a wide receiver holds on to two passes in a row, they lose that game. But they looked really good beating Green Bay. So is that just one game, or are they that good?
No, I mean, they're good. That turned out to be sort of optimal Atlanta, and I think if we parse out everything going on there, first ever game at their new football Taj Mahal, hermetically sealed dome. That's where they're out there. They're not a great outdoor team. You know, you had the slow grass and outdoor against Chicago. You've got the fast track on the artificial turf, and you've got Green Bay coming into the game without both starting tackles.
Right.
They lose their best defensive player, Mike Daniels, basically at the start of the game. I mean, Mike Daniels was Reggie White in week one.
Right.
They lined him up at four different spots, and he ate the guy across from him's lunch every single snap in that Seattle
game.
And
Jordy Nelson they lose.
Lose Jordy Nelson.
And then they lose their best offensive cog besides the quarterback right away as well. So, and they had some calls that went against them. So if those two teams meet in January under fairly different circumstances, I don't think Atlanta boat races them, but I do think Atlanta needed to make a statement. And I think especially their offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, it needed to look like Kyle Shanahan, you know, 2016 Falcons offense back in their home dome. And it did. So that'll settle some things down. Now, Atlanta also lost Vic Beasley for at least a month. I think that defense is better than it was a year ago, but he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink. So I'm interested to see their pass rush for 4 to 6 weeks without him.
Let me bring this up, because I had this feeling. I mean, I've obviously watched football for a lot of years. I had this feeling on Sunday watching Red Zone and watching the Redskins that every play somebody was going out. Mm. Somebody was hurt.
It's bad.
Somebody was carted off every play. And
I don't
remember this before. It probably happened and I wasn't aware of it. Mm-hmm. But I really, with all the talk about player safety and all the talk about CTE, mm-hmm. I looked at that and I turned away a couple of times because every play, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I sit there with a notebook and we're in the green room at CBS and we've got all these big screen TVs and all the games on at once and I'm taking notes and figuring out what I'm going to write and trying to track all these injuries, you know, for our post-game show and having to come on an update.
Right.
And there was a time where I just, like, wrote, you know, all these injuries, !! Like almost your head spinning. It's mm-hmm. it's sad. It almost mm-hmm. feels like you're covering, like, I'm trying to choose my words close, like, carefully. Like, it's like you're covering human suffering to a certain degree. Like, you're looking at one screen, mm-hmm. and it's a bunch
yes.
of guys on their knees looking away
yes.
because the injury was so gruesome, they
right.
don't want to look back. You know what
right.
I mean? And there's people in distress. Like, there's people screaming,
yeah.
and
yeah.
they're in very real pain, and careers are ending. Like, you know, that's, you know, a lot of these guys, that's it. They might never come back, depending where they are in their career. And it almost happens at such a rate that it's very easy to sort of dehumanize it, and you mm-hmm. just get caught up in next man up, and,
sure.
you know, it's a game of attrition. But it is a game of pain and suffering for a lot of these guys, and you know, especially for these, you know, like, you talk to agents, and, like, how was your weekend? Well, I only had two guys go on IR. I mean,
the Denver kid started to cry. The Denver kid started to cry. The Redskin game, I believe. Well, Liz, you were.
Six
I believe there,
starters.
I believe there were five straight plays in which the trainer came out
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
somebody was laying on the ground
and they were writhing.
You know, do you
yeah,
recall,
really
Jason? Do you recall this being in this volume before?
It has seemed to be, even from this preseason, fairly staggering. I bring this up. I say this from time to time, and it's not to be cavalier, and I don't know that it's ever changing, but this is the same gridiron that Newt Rockne played on. Like, nothing's changed about it. But the athletes are – these aren't the same human beings.
Right.
Like, everything about the game has been ramped up, you know, I don't know how many fold, 100-fold in terms of bigger, stronger, faster.
Sure.
But
mm-hmm.
nothing about the geometry
right.
and geography
right.
of, you know, this template has changed at all. It's the exact same gridiron, and it's already a collision sport, and there's just nowhere to go.
And you look at, like, the Baltimore center, Yanda. He's
yeah.
out. That's it. He's
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Greg Olsen breaks his foot. Nobody touches him.
Fractures his ankle, and he walks off the field.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
it's just...
It's like, I mean, I'm sure he was probably somewhat still in shock, and he has, his pain threshold is all world. I mean, some
yeah.
of the stuff that you hear stories about him, and it reminds me of when I covered hockey. But, yeah, I mean, that's it, you know. I'll be back next year, coach. And
yeah.
You
early in the year.
Have to move on. I mean, well, Baltimore has 17 guys on IR. I mean, we're 2 weeks into the season.
Oh,
I think they have 15 or 17 on IR.
Jeez.
They have three or four who've been suspended. And then you had their center retire 2 hours before the first
right.
training camp practice.
Right.
And their best offensive player, Steve Smith, he said adios at the end of the season. You add up their IR suspension and retirements, and it's over 20.
It's a team.
It's only a 53-man roster.
It is honestly, and I know I'm getting off on a tangent here, it is no wonder that people take performance-enhancing drugs. It is no wonder at all. If they can get out...
You can't perform without them.
Much less than the week afterwards, you know, use pot to like manage the pain.
Absolutely.
If it were my son or, you know, husband, I'd definitely... You know, vote for that over an addictive narcotic.
Yeah. No, it's really been something. I got a million questions. No. Plug your podcast.
Sure. That's it.
Yeah. Well, okay. There's one more. There's just one more, but it's quick. It's quick. Arizona looks awful. They look awful.
Yeah.
And they were a contender for 3 or 4 years. Am I right that they're terrible?
That's not a good football team, and they're caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a coach, Bruce Arians, who's been dealing with some significant health issues for several years, to the point where many of his closest confidants in the coaching community, who he talks to and who he had confided in the extent of his illness last year, were convinced that he was done at the end of the season no matter what.
Yeah.
They're kind of been in all-in mode for a while now, but the quarterback is declining rapidly, decided not to make the move up for Mahomes that Andy Reid made, although they considered it deeply in the draft, and they decided not to throw the Brinks truck at Tony Romo because they figured, well, he might not be that much different than Carson Palmer, and he's probably just going to broadcast anyway. And now they're in a situation where they have no next man up at quarterback. Oh. And this quarterback isn't going to make it through the season. And the guy they planned on running their offense through, he went down, 2 quarters into the season. And he's not
David
coming
Johnson.
Back for 2 months, David Johnson.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Larry looks like a 36-year-old receiver.
Yeah.
No, they're cooked.
That's what it looked like.
The good thing for them is Seattle's the only team in that division is no good anymore.
Right.
You know, Seattle's the only okay team, but they don't have an offensive line. But big issues there. I don't think Bruce Arians will be back if they have to start over with a young quarterback. They're going to have a lot to sort out in the offseason.
All right, plug your podcast.
We got Mark Waller on the Be More Opinionated podcast this week. Tone, who the hell's Mark Waller? He runs NFL International. The Ravens are going over there to play the Jags at Wembley Stadium. I'm going to say, hey, hon, we ain't going over there to cheer for the Ravens if you ain't got Natty Bell in Wembley Stadium, hon. We better fix that.
Thank you, Jason. It's a pleasure.
Anytime, dude.
He's simply the best. He's just simply the best. So happy to have him back on this show. We were sort of miserable without him. We'll take a break. We will come back with news, I believe. Lots of news stories. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Because we were talking so much about football with Jason, we do the SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals. To help you get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek will grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this high-quality pod, they get $20. We've had people talk about this, including Chris Saliza.
That's right.
They get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Blair St. Amand in Elkridge, Maryland, a longtime emailer of consequence. A sampling of my college band Spork's musical prowess. We made it into the studio a couple of times, and in case you never picked up copies because they were never made available anywhere, you have my permission to play these songs on the podcast as you see fit. In terms of critical commentary, I'd like to say the name was about a fusion of musical styles, but really we came up with the name Spork after realizing what we were using to eat at Taco Bell all the time. Think outside the bun, indeed.
There you go.
Michael, if somebody like Blair St. Amant of Elkridge, Maryland, wants to send in music unsolicited, how do they do it?
Please email the show at jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Are we selling anything today?
What do you want me to mention?
Whatever you'd like.
Well, let's give a plug
to college tuition for Bootsy.
TonyKornheiserShow.com. And I would remind people that we still have some great show hats that are on heavy discount.
So we should do that.
Yeah, I just did.
Yeah, good job. Okay, Nigel, you have news.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. We'll start out with baseball, where the Yankees won, beat the Twins last night. The interesting thing from that is Judge hit his 44th home
run. Aaron Judge,
yes.
Wilbon said he wouldn't get to 40 when he had 34 at the All-Star break. Wilbon believed he tapped himself out at the home run derby.
Yeah, he did for a while.
I said he would get to 40, but I said he would not get to 50. He would not break Mark McGwire's rookie record of 49. Do you know what's second? Mm. It's really a long distance. Mm. It's 38.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Mark McGwire is the only rookie to get to 40 ever.
Wow.
Ever. Wow. I think Wally Burger and Frank Robinson had 38 and then 49.
Wow.
And so Judge is at 44 now. I don't think he'll get 50, but maybe he will.
He's got a shot.
He either hits it out or he strikes out.
Right, exactly. Right, that seems to
be it. That's baseball today.
And the Marlins game, Giancarlo Stanton hit number 55.
Now, I think he's going to break 60. Yeah. I think I've been saying for a few weeks, I think within the 62 to 65 range, and then I wonder what will be said. Because most of us believe that 61 is the record.
Oh, right. Yes.
Most of us believe that. Most of us believe that everybody who went over juicing.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
But I don't know about Giancarlo Stanton. Is he juicing? I don't know.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I think my guess is there's going to be some pitchers that are just going to groove a couple fastballs.
Yeah.
Give him a shot.
Yeah.
Sure. At this point,
he can hit.
Yeah, he sure can.
He can hit. And he's been beamed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's been beamed. And he's gotten back up and still hits. Yeah. So he's pretty good. What else?
Tough news for golf in the Washington, D.C. area. 10 years after Tiger Woods and his foundation, I guess you could say, saved PGA Golf in Washington. They don't have a title sponsor, and now
they've gone through AT&T. Yeah. They've gone through Quicken Loans.
That's really surprising to me that they can't find a sponsor.
Can I make a suggestion on that?
Yes. Sure.
Do you think it's possible that Tiger Woods at this point is toxic, and they don't want to affiliate with the Tiger Woods Foundation, and that the last arrest was like? Oh, no.
Well, I suppose,
May I counter?
Yes, counter. Oh. Michael knows more than I.
No, one of the issues with the modern PGA Tour schedule is that if you are a regular tour event, it is so devalued that why would you want to commit those big dollars to that event? You would be better served going to the Champions Tour or something a little bit smaller where you can actually get a return for that. If you're not a World Golf Championship, if you're not a major, if you're not part of the FedEx Cup, no one's watching. And this is sad because golf has a big history.
Not only is no one watching, no one's showing up to play.
Right.
Yeah. And they actually have a pretty all-star lineup of winners at Congressional and at this, you know, the variations of Tiger's tournament. So you're getting the winners, but no one is putting eyeballs on that in the middle of the summer.
So here's what I wonder about. If that tournament fades, Congressional, which has hosted a number of U.S. Opens, one of the most famous Open of all time where Ken Venturi went 36 to win that, does Congressional, which was devalued itself by the Rory McIlroy win 5 or 6 years ago, do they pass from us as a major championship course?
No, I think time comes back to them. This is a true championship golf course. I'd say the trend in golf right now is moving away from golf courses that look like Congressional, which is the big, long, heavy, rough, guarded fairways, and moving to something a little bit more natural looking. So they will get their turn again, but they're going to have to sit on the bench for 10, 15, 20 years to get to get those tournaments back. I think there's a bigger space of potential here for smaller public type golf courses. I think this is a time where everyone should be talking about a renovation down at East Potomac Park, which I have been a big believer in. And if you are a fan of golf course architecture, you should take a look at Michael McCartan's thesis from his graduate school days, where he looks at the possibility of renovating that space.
Wow. Who is Michael McCartan?
He was part of the Tom Doak architecture team. He's a big name, young name in golf course architecture.
Okay, all right. So will we feel sad not having a tour stop?
It doesn't bother me in the least, Tony. I mean, I'm sure it's for people who love golf, it's probably very sad, but I'm not one of those people. Okay.
All right, what else we got?
Tough times for Toys R Us, Mr. Tony.
They declared bankruptcy.
Yeah, with roughly $5 billion, that's billion with a B, in the dollars in debt.
What happened?
Amazon happened. Wow. That's what happened.
Yeah, I think people are getting the toys elsewhere.
Amazon.
And I love the spin from Dave Brandon.
They're not going to close the stores, though.
Yeah, they got
to
close. They said 1,600 stores would operate as usual, and then it will work with investors to address that debt. So, Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know how they're going
to. $5 billion.
That's quite a bit of money.
Box stores, they're gone. It's Amazon's crushed them. Everything.
What happens to them?
They go away.
Become condos?
Yes.
It's like all the record stores. What happened to them? You know, it's just
Yes, there are no more record stores.
No record stores at all.
I'm so old. I remember record stores. Yes. I liked record stores.
Do you remember when you thought, I thought for sure Tower Records was going to be around forever.
Yes. Why wouldn't you say
that? Like the best
that
store ever.
Why wouldn't it be? Why would it was a destination. Yes. Like, let's just go to Tower Records.
It's recently, it's within the last 25 years that they invested heavily in a Times Square store that everybody liked, and it's been closed for 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah, they bought that FAO Schwartz, the big one.
Right.
On Fifth Ave. And that's like an iconic building in a store.
So, David, so you're saying that nobody goes to stores anymore because.
I don't think so. I think everybody orders online now.
I don't. No, I mean, I'm old.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I like to feel the goods. No, but no. I like to touch the goods.
How often are you shopping at Toys R Us?
No, I'm not. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't shop at Toys R Us. Not even for Bootsy. I'm not going to Toys R Us.
An interesting story in the Post this morning about whooping cranes. There has been funding for, I want to say, 50 years. Hmm. When this project first started, there were only 42 whooping cranes left. And so this was an idea to preserve them and breed them.
And it's done very well.
Yeah, it's done very, very well. I think they said there's over 500
Maryland.
Now. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And the Patuxent area, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Southern Maryland.
But the funding has run out, so they're closing it out.
Okay. Tell the people how much the funding is a year.
$1.5 million.
That's just nothing.
That's
nothing in the greater scheme of things.
Right.
You can find that anywhere in a state or federal budget. That's zero amount of money.
It really
$1.5 million. Right. I would hope that somebody, even a donor, would say, we got to have this.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whooping cranes.
Well, and I know this.
They're big.
The thrust of this.
They whoop.
They're big and they can be nasty, I guess.
Yes. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, really?
They spit in your eye or something?
Spit in your eye, call your names.
Really?
No. Yeah. Tauntous, sarcastic.
Yeah.
But I know the story is essentially about the whooping cranes, but you also read about the people who've been working in this program.
40 years.
40 years.
Yeah.
And now they're like, it's closing down in a few months.
What do you mean?
We'll shift you off to the turtle program. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm not going to work in the turtle program or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's one.
You feel
one,
for them.
I mean, I don't mean to sound like a ridiculous one percenter, but in any state budget,
that's not a lot of money.
It's just nothing.
Yeah.
$1.5 million. It's ink.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
It's nothing.
Right.
Stop it.
Right.
Refund this thing. I want to read this.
Yes.
This is about the death of somebody none of us has heard of, I don't think. Stanislav Petrov, 77 years old.
No.
Right? You never heard of him.
Never.
No, sir.
Let's read a little bit. When alarms began to ring and a control panel flashed in front of Stanislav Petrov, a 44-year-old lieutenant colonel, seated in a secret bunker south of Moscow, it appeared that the world was less than 30 minutes from nuclear war.
Hmm.
The siren howled.
Is this that guy?
That guy.
Oh, okay.
The siren howled, he later said, but I just sat there for a few seconds staring at the big backlit red screen with the word launch on it. His chair, he said, began to feel like a hot frying pan. Colonel Petrov, an official with Russia's early warning missile system, was charged with determining whether the United States had opened intercontinental fire on the Soviet Union. Just after midnight on September 26, 1983, all signs seemed to point to yes. The satellite signal Colonel Petrov received in his bunker indicated that a single Minuteman missile had been launched and was headed towards the east. Four more missiles appeared to follow according to satellite signals, and the protocol was clear. Notify Soviet Air Defense Headquarters in time for the military's general staff to consult with Soviet leader Yuri Andropov. A retaliatory attack and nuclear holocaust would likely ensue.
Wow.
I never heard of this. Yet Colonel Petrov, juggling a phone in one hand and an intercom in the other, judged that the red alert was a false alarm. Soviet missiles armed and ready remained in their silos, and American missiles apparently minutes from impact seemed to vanish into the air.
Okay.
I had a funny feeling in my gut, Colonel Petrov told the Washington Post in 1999. I didn't want to make a mistake. I made a decision and that was it. He celebrated with half a liter of vodka, fell into a sleep that lasted 28 hours, and went back to work.
There you go.
While the 50-50 decision may have averted catastrophe, it ultimately destroyed the career of Colonel Petrov, who died May 19th. That's a while back, in his home in Fryazino, a center for scientific research near Moscow. He was 77. His death, much like the defining moment of his life was largely unreported. It was announced by Carl Schumacher, a friend and political activist who said he heard the news from Colonel Petrov's son Dmitry, and that Colonel Petrov had been sick for the past 6 months with an internal disease.
Oh.
Okay, later in this thing, Colonel Petrov said he was initially skeptical of the launch because only a handful of missiles had been fired. Quote, "When people start a war, they don't start it with only five missiles," unquote, and because Soviet ground-based radar had shown no evidence of an attack. But a military investigation chastised and eventually reassigned Colonel Petrov in large part for not keeping a detailed log of his actions during the 5 minutes it took him to decide the alarm was false. His hands were full, he said. He also had thwarted a protocol that was designed to take such weighty decisions out of the hands of humans. It's like War Games. Remember the movie War Games?
Yeah, sure.
A computer, not an individual officer, would decide whether missiles were imminent and thus whether retaliatory action might be necessary. You've heard of this.
Oh, yeah.
I never heard of this.
I didn't know we were that close, and that was
in the Reagan era.
Yes.
Did you see the other thing in there? He wasn't even supposed to be on duty that night.
Yeah, he was.
The other guy called in sick.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So this is a worldwide hero. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Did you know?
No, this is...
So this is to me, like the movie Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it?
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
What do you mean this happened?
Right.
And nobody knew about it.
Right.
What do you mean this happened?
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that, that among the many close calls that was, I didn't know.
That's
a wow,
isn't it?
Oh, sure.
That's a wow. Good for him, as we like to say, because if not, we wouldn't be saying
anything.
That's
right.
How is this not part of an episode or a series of episodes?
In the Americans.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. All right, we're done. Yes. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Old Guy Radio, and we will talk to Liz and David individually about things that they have knowledge about. In Liz's case, the Redskins will go local, the Redskins beating the Rams, and in David's case, Kyrie Irving and his interesting view of the world, and Kevin Durant and his interesting view of Twitter. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies ad. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com. Find the best pair of underwear in the world. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own, made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked, but not be naked. There's 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guarantee you'll love your undies or your money back. Right now, MeUndies has this exclusive offer just for listeners to this high-quality pod. You can get 20% off your first pair, and you get free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. So there's a no-brainer to try, because you get 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? As they say in the telethon trade, pick up the phone. To get your 20% off, free shipping, and their 100% guarantee, and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. That is MeUndies, MeUndies, MeUndies.com/Tony K. Limited time offer. Get on it now. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It asked me to read it changed my life, but that's a stretch. It's time to let MeUndies change yours, and that's fine. Go to MeUndies.com/Tony right now.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This song is great.
Yeah.
Bill Medley, who is the surviving Righteous Brother, Bobby Hatfield died sometime back, 15 years ago, I would bet, maybe a little bit less. Bill Medley, 77 years old today. They were the house band, I believe, on Shindig at one point, and then
really?
They broke out. Uh-huh. And it was called Blue Eyed Soul at the
time. Where was Shindig? Because I know American Bandstand was in Philly, right, originally?
Shindig, I think, was in Los Angeles.
Was it Los Angeles?
I think it was in Los Angeles. And this is in Top Gun, isn't it?
This is.
Doesn't Tom Cruise serenade Kelly McGillis with this in Top Gun?
Exactly, at the bar scene, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know.
Just one of those voices that's unmistakable. Mm.
In the area of critical commentary, Phil Spector was...
Oh, he did this.
Yeah, this is his song. But
oh, yeah.
He found the Righteous Brothers out in San Francisco, said, all right, you guys got to come back east, let's do this thing. And so he brought them back, and he wanted to write a song for them to sort of display them, and this was the song they came up with. In fact... Wow. You've Lost That Loving Feeling was just a dummy line they put in there. And afterwards, they're like, actually, that kind of works.
We'll keep really?
It yeah.
So that's an all-time tune.
Oh,
I mean,
is.
Everybody.
It is. And it's just an all-time sound.
That's an all-time
sound. Wall of sound.
The texture of it. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
All right, so Liz, you are just back from Los Angeles. So you went out Saturday, came back Monday?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
And do you want to assess The victory of the Washington Redskins on any level against a very bad team, to be fair.
Yes.
Yes.
And I do so from the prism of how catastrophic a loss would have been.
I mean,
you know, if there is such a thing as a must-win game in week two, this really was it, given how horrible the Redskins looked in week one, and they had shown nothing in the preseason, and everything seemed to be trending to a hopeless area, and their upcoming two opponents, you could easily see an 0-4 start, you know, had they
Oakland
not
and Kansas City.
But
you know what?
Yes.
They're going to win one of those games.
You think?
I do.
Okay.
I believe they'll win one of the. I don't know which one. Yeah. I believe they'll win one.
Yeah.
But those are good teams.
Yes. So, I mean, I think what's notable about this win, and probably a game that not a lot of people care about, so I don't want to drive your listeners away, but you know, Coach Jay Gruden, former quarterback, so pass happy, so in some ways you would say predictable, and I think people were anticipating a narrative where he gets out-coached by his protege, Sean McVay, who's 31, the youngest NFL coach. And, you know, lo and behold, Gruden completely reinvents his offense.
Runs it.
Yeah, runs it, runs
39
it, runs
it. Times.
Yeah, 269 rushing yards and achieved without what you'd say is a great back, you know, on the team. Mm-hmm. So it was a completely different approach, and it worked, and it seems like they should stick with this approach.
So this is interesting to me. Because the Redskins were in jeopardy of losing that game late.
If
Jared
that
Goff
said,
went down the field.
Yes.
So I don't want to give too much credit here. But that was maybe the first time or maybe one of the very few times that I thought to myself, he can coach.
Mm. Yes.
And I never, I don't usually think that. Because he ran it and ran it and ran it.
Stayed with it.
And didn't stop.
Right.
Yes.
And stayed with it even though it wouldn't produce a lot of points.
Right.
It would take time off the clock. I just thought that was a good job by Jay Gruden, and I don't usually think. Did you feel that way?
I was very pleased to see that they stuck with it because they've had many games, and it's part of the frustration, where for the first half they would run the ball.
And then they'd pull away.
And then they'd run the ball four times in the second
and
half.
And then afterward they'd say, well, we fell behind. We couldn't run it anymore, but they'd have been behind like 3 points.
Right.
Like, you really could have stuck with it.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, that's kind of the headline. But if you're looking for signs of trouble or brace for trouble, there were plenty in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, to allow it to be tied, you know.
Shouldn't have been that close.
Shouldn't have been that close at any point. There were a lot of points left unscored. There were a lot of yards left ungained. And they had six starters. That's more than a fourth, if my math is right, of the starting lineup, suffer significant injuries.
Yes.
Some of whom came back. Mason Foster heroically came back after getting his shoulder popped back in the socket and had this sort of game-saving interception.
Just one hand.
So heroic on his part. But, boy, they got beat up in this game.
I'm going to go back to this because I know that Sean McVay was the offensive coordinator and is the hot young boy and gets a team and won the first game and so on and so forth. It seemed to me like, and this is pure speculation, that Jay Gruden said, I know everybody thinks he's going to out-coach me, and he's not going to out-coach me because I'm gonna do this different thing here. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So
it's very easy to supply that narrative.
Were they pals?
Pals. Deep admiration.
Because it was an embrace after the game, but it was quick, and then they went their separate ways.
No, sincere pals. And their history together goes back before, it predates the Redskins.
So it's not Tom Herman and Urban Meyer.
No, and I think their families are friends as well. I mean, even before these guys. No, it's a sincere friendship. So it was, I didn't think they were going to win that game, you know, heading out there. So.
Oh, I did.
You know,
I did.
Lots of people are saying that. It's like, well, it's the NFL. And we're poking holes at the Colts, which, you know, the Rams destroyed in week one.
Oh, the Colts are terrible beyond words.
Right.
But still, the Redskins haven't looked particularly formidable.
Right.
And even though this was a win and a very important win, serious questions remain about the Redskins' passing game, which has been their calling card.
Well, can I ask one question about that?
And I'll stop after this.
You know, Terrell Pryor, can someone teach him to actually catch the ball?
Be helpful.
Because he's tall and he's fast, but he doesn't actually.
Athlete.
Yeah, he doesn't actually catch the ball, and that's why he was a quarterback in college.
Yeah, I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody you'll find, having completely been intoxicated by him in the training camp.
Yeah,
and then
it's
not really realizing the vast leap between playing against a pretend defense, you know, your own defense
your
in camp.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what it's like to really feel pressure. And that's where either his eyes are in or not in the right place. He's thinking about running before he's thinking about catching.
Right.
You know, I don't know exactly what's going wrong there, but it is quite a different thing to play in a game.
I'll use an analogy here. It's really hard to do what Rick Ankiel did. It's really hard to start out at one position totally different than the position you end up playing.
I agree.
It's hard.
I agree. But it's also really hard to do what Pierre Garçon did, even though that was always his position.
Yeah.
He knew. There's I've lost track of it. Catches in my head he made when it was clear he was being destroyed on both sides, completely clobbered. I mean, just a lot of respect for that degree of toughness and willingness to block. You know, at the same time, he was maybe someone they shouldn't have let get away.
You're right.
Right.
I'm going to shift gears to David and Kyrie Irving, who goes on TV yesterday. And Kyrie Irving, when asked, did you talk to LeBron, goes, no. And when asked, do you think you should have, and he goes, why? my position on Kyrie Irving that I've said on television on this show is I think he's a really, really good basketball player. I don't get this at all. I don't get walking away from the best player of the game and leaving it embittered in this way. And if I was critical, and I was critical of Kevin Durant to not even tell Russell Westbrook, to not warn him at all, I am critical of this as well. There seems to be, if I watch TV correctly, there seems to be a shift sort of towards Kyrie Irving and understanding Kyrie Irving. And I find myself still saying I don't. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Well, I understand it. I wouldn't have done it, but I understand why someone who's 25 would feel the way he feels. And, you know, with a championship, you know, it's not like he doesn't have one. So he can say, I won a ring with LeBron. What else do I have to do? What else? What's the point of staying? You know, my point would be win another one with him, but it's me.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's what young players do. And you understand that. Kyrie is, there's a phrase, too clever by half. I think Kyrie's way too clever by half.
How is he viewed around the league, which is mostly a young player's league?
No, I think he's respected. He can. Like, there's not five guys in the league who can do what he can do on the basketball court.
Right.
You know, he is a tremendous talent offensively. He doesn't play any defense. But he's a tremendous offensive talent. Unguardable. He's simply unguardable. You have to just hope he misses the shot he takes because you can't stay in front of him. He's too good with the ball. You know, and could he be a lead player on a great team? Sure, he could be. I don't know if he will be, but he could be. He's that talented.
Why do I just think of Stephon Marbury?
Why
do I think about a guy who was playing with Kevin Garnett and decided this town's not big enough for both of us?
Oh, from that standpoint, yes. Yeah. Oh, no question. You could certainly make that analogy.
And I just thought, how dumb is this?
Yeah, well, it was dumb then, dumb now.
How did he land in such a great spot? Because he did land in a great spot in Boston.
In Boston, well, they wanted him because he's incredibly talented. You know, I know why Boston did it, because the team that they had that was the number one seed in the East got their doors blown off by Cleveland in the conference finals.
But why did Cleveland trade him to Boston?
Well, because that was the best trade they could get.
It was.
And the main reason is the pick they got from Brooklyn, which will be a top five, top three pick. You know, and you don't – look, I went back and researched this. In the last 20 years of the NBA, there have been 181 teams that have won 50 games in a season or in a lockout the equivalent of 50 games in a season. Do you know how many of those 181 teams have gotten a top five pick the next year?
Eight.
Two.
Ooh. Two.
Wow. Two.
Wow.
One was Detroit, and they took Darko Milicic for second pick.
Oh, that's right.
And the other one was Boston just last year, this year.
Oh, they were number two.
Yeah, they got they had the number one pick from Brooklyn, and they wound up trading it. But it doesn't happen that often. So if you're a 51 team and you get a chance to get a top five player in the draft the next year, you have to do that trade, even if it's within the conference. So I understand why Cleveland did it.
I just found that some of the things, like Kyrie Irving at one point said, this doesn't mean I won't play with LeBron again. And I said, I yelled at TV, yes, it does.
Yeah, pretty much does.
Yes,
it does. Pretty much
he'll
does.
Never, no, no, he will never play with you again.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Kevin Durant and fake Twitter accounts. I don't understand this. What is it?
No, this is totally not me at my stage of my career and life to understand why. And I wrote about this this week too. Like, why? Why is Carmelo Anthony angry that ESPN ranked him 64th? Why do you even care about that? It's so stupid. But I talked to a lot of players, and it gets back to that they disrespected him, and how could they say that about him? And they were more upset about Carmelo's ranking than their own in many cases.
I just ranked him 74th.
You know, and so they just it's all this disrespect.
But Kevin Durant goes on the internet as someone other than Kevin Durant.
And I sort of understand that because you don't want to be Kevin Durant responding to trolls, because people would say, why are you doing that? You know, so.
But he is Kevin Durant responding to trolls.
Yeah, but nobody knew that until yesterday. So I get that, but I don't know why you waste your time.
And he took a shot at Billy Donovan.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
He was nice to Westbrook.
Yes, very nice. Well, he likes Westbrook, I think.
Doesn't like him enough to say, I'm leaving.
No, and that was a mistake, and he should have. But that gets back to it's weird with young players.
But he said that team stinks.
Yeah.
Other than Westbrook. Yeah. Stinks.
That's a little shit.
How those guys feel?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit of one. Yeah.
Now, is he denying it was him? Is he saying he was hacked?
I don't know. This is a story. I am so not interested in this story. I can't tell you. So I don't know if he's publicly denied it or not. But
I always think of Kevin Durant, and I don't think of everybody like this, but I think of Kevin Durant in this way, that he says things publicly where you go, and I think of John Wall this way.
Mm-hmm.
Says things publicly where you go, why are you saying that? Why are you?
Yeah.
You've won. Why are you saying that?
This gets back to the whole thing. I don't know why. And it's generational. Yeah. I don't know why players react to things the way that they do. If I'm Kevin Durant and I just won the NBA championship.
And I was the MVP.
And I was the MVP. Yeah.
I proved everything.
I could literally light $100 bills on fire for the next 20 years.
And so you care about what Vinny from Queens?
Exactly. Why do you care?
You care about that?
Why do you care?
You know what I bet happens? I bet his friends say, did you see what they said about you?
That, sure, maybe.
You're going to take that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that does happen.
I'd get rid of those friends.
I don't.
I told my family, don't read about me.
Yeah.
And if you do, don't tell me about it.
Sure. Why would you do that?
Don't tell me about it. I don't want to know.
I don't know why you... You don't have to do that. You don't have to do that.
Oh, look, the comment section.
Why? And you would scroll all the way down and read every single thing?
Good Lord, no.
Why?
They can't do that.
Craziness. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we've got an emails, and we've got a jingle. Do we have a jingle?
A jingle from Brad Weiss.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic. Oh, is that the one you started yesterday and got it wrong?
No, that was something else I messed up.
All right. Well, it's good to know you messed up. Because every day goes by and you've always messed up. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
They sent one driver, but where did mine go? You know who I am. I want a box of that. My doctoral degree, I beg them for years. Won't give it back. I just got a box of that. Where is mine?
Don't get so is of my mistakes.
Give me mine.
My tweener needs to activate.
Send in mine.
I am up there on the wall of fame. So I want a box of that.
That's great. Brad Weiss, that's just great. That's great. When we sign off now on Mondays before Monday Night Football, and we're literally in the Jumbotron at the city where the game is, because we send it to Susie Kalber.
Yeah.
So we say it's Susie Kalber, and I will say the city, like last night was New York. Well, it was Jersey, but I said, New York, New York, send me a big box of bagels. Who knows if they will? Who knows if they will? Before we get into the mailbag, let me say thank you to Jason Lockenfor, CBS Sports, for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, SeatGeek, Upside.com, and MeUndies. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Eric Leifer, I heard your discussion about the origin of the Pendletones name, quoting Brian Wilson from page 51 of his recent memoir, I Am Brian Wilson. Eventually, we ended up naming ourselves the Pendletones. I don't remember whose idea it was, maybe Mike's, but it came from the same place as the song Surfin'. It was part of the package. Pendletones was a name about the way surfers dressed, plaid Pendleton shirts over white t-shirts and khaki pants. Real surfers put a layer of Vaseline under the shirts to keep warm, but we weren't real surfers. We were real singers. It's very nice to know. Yeah. Chris Jones in Wheaton, Maryland, longtime Little, recently relocated to Chicago. Oh, Wheaton, Illinois, I'm sorry. Relocated to Chicago from Atlanta. After hearing Michael Wilbon mention on last Monday's show that he would be entering the Northwestern Sports Hall of Fame, I knew where I'd be spending my Saturday night. From my third row seat, I was able to watch Wilbon as well as Christine Brennan, among others, be honored at halftime of the game against Bowling Green. I left soon after to catch a train back to downtown Chicago, but Wilbon was already on the concourse, and he and Lilbon walked a few feet in front of me until I reached my gate to leave. A well-deserved honor for Wilbon. P.S. Wilbon is sneaky tall and in great-looking shape. Okay. He's going to feel good about that.
That's great.
From Logan in Charlottesville, Virginia, while 7/14/17 is a nice birthday and a palindrome, Cousin Lucas's July 13th is as well, as are all birthdays from the 10th through the 19th of this past July. I'm surprised you didn't lobby for 7/17/17 as your most preferred arrival for Bootsy. Maybe his sibling can make up for it with an 8/18/18 arrival. Hashtag tell Michael to plan his weekend before Thanksgiving accordingly. From Brian Poole in Seattle, Washington. Today you read a letter about my son Calvin being born on 7/14/17, a palindrome. The conversation that followed talked about Bootsy's first cousin being born the day before. I feel compelled to point out that 7/13/17 is also a palindrome, and it's at three prime numbers, so he's got that going for him. Did I deny that it was a palindrome?
No, and we went back to the tape last night, and you wanted 7/11/17 for the symmetry.
Yeah, okay, all right. Q. Lou, still in Atlanta, on Monday's show regarding Bootsy's cousin Lucas, who's born on 7/13, you said Michael and Liz both thought it would be exciting to have a 7/14/17 because it's palindrome, right? I may not have been an English major, but I'm pretty sure 7/13/17 is palindrome as well. From Rory in Cleveland, while discussing Hurricane Irma the other day, you lightly joked that you were eventually going to be in a nursing home. While I love the fact that the pod is broadcast live from Chatter, but being live from your eventual nursing home will be a comedy goldmine. Oh, doesn't have to be about sports, just your daily hot takes on life inside the walls. When you're in a nursing home, I don't know. Mike in Richmond, Virginia, I wanted to add one note of appreciation for Chris Saliza to offset the flood of hilarious hate mail. I get nervous over the summer that he'd taken his talents exclusively to CNN. It's good to have him back. From Eric in Pittsburgh, I was catching up on the podcast while mowing the lawn and doing some yard work over the weekend. Gotta say, in that context, the leaf blower situation isn't nearly as distracting. John Agilata from Wentzville, Missouri. I'll be making my inaugural visit to Chatter in 2018, all the way from Missouri. Wow. Please tell the leaf blower.
No, we will.
The message is simple. This is from Craig Stampone, of Charlotte, North Carolina. He says, Chuck Todd is the Redskins' goal line fade pass of NFL gambling.
Oh, come on.
So I think that's crushing Chuck Todd.
Come on, he's 3-4. He's getting crushing on the rise. Chuck.
Stephen Hamilton in Cleveland. Last night I watched Life with Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal with the woman to whom I'm related by marriage. In the credits, I noticed the presence of a name that made so much become clear, that name Nigel Phelps. Coincidence that in 10 years of listening, I've never heard Nigel's last name? I don't think so. And this explains why Nigel still harbors an irrational resentment to Michael Phelps.
No, rational.
For the limo shun from so long ago. Michael wouldn't even give a ride to his brother. My brother would be dead to me if he spurned me like that, too. P.S. I'm an only child like you. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white. Thanks for coming.
Can I ask a practical question? Are we doing Stonehenge tonight?
I like the North Star. He brings you home to me. When are you coming back? I like the mammals.
to me. That time's more tender agree, but she speaks so wistfully of words that still could be. One I stop and stare. She can still be standing there. She's my prey without a prayer. And I got your sign again. Don't tell me I'm running circles. You're just a wrinkle in my mind. In time, you'll shake face again. That's when I start to hear more old story. That's when I start to make you. Spend the day, stare at the scribbled page, search for the words to say, to prove you can remain. Pointless until you flow, from where I'll never know. One touch before you go, and I got your friend again. Don't tell me I'll run in circles, you're just a wrinkle in my mind. In time you'll show your face again, that's when I start to hear more of the story. That's when I start to meet you. There's no one else to see the forest, the trees, and your face is upon my mind. Your heart beats in syncopated time. Some would suggest that I won't stop until I find your voice up in my head. She's just a catchy wrist, so I clench a panic fist and tell them what they missed. It's pointless if they don't see what they cannot believe, that you're so much more than me. And I caught your scent again. Don't tell me I'm running circles, you're just a wrinkle in my mind. In time you'll show your face again. That's when I start to hear more of the story. That's when I start to meet you. The forest of the trees and your face is running my mind. Your heart beats in syncopated time. Someone suggested I